Welcome, everybody, to the afternoon session of the Court of Appeals on October 10th, 2018. I'm Rico Bishop. I'm pleased to be joined by our Chief Judge, Frankie Moore, on my right, and Dave Arterburn on my left. When I call your cases, I will have to repeat the case name again before you begin to present for purposes of the live streaming. And along those lines, I just want to remind everybody that we are live streaming on NETV, so to the extent that you have any sensitive information in your case, please be mindful of that. All right, we'll go ahead and begin with the first case, Blavell versus Shanahan. And again, this is Blavell versus Shanahan, and you may certainly correct my pronunciation.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Timothy Buckley on behalf of the appellant, Corey Shanahan. We're here to, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal time. We're here on an appeal of an amended order from the Buffalo County District Court granting the appellee, Amy Blavell, sole legal and physical custody of the party's daughter, Copper, stemming from her complaint to establish paternity, custody, and visitation and support against the appellant, Corey Shanahan, Copper's father. On September 20th, 2016, the district court entered a temporary order awarding Amy sole legal and sole physical custody of Copper and developed a temporary parenting plan pursuant to the order. On November 22nd, 2016, Corey filed a counterclaim praying for an order awarding him sole legal and physical custody, or in the alternative, for joint legal or joint physical custody. Trial was held on November 13, 2017 to the district court to establish paternity, custody, visitation, and support, and to consider Corey's counterclaim. On December 4, 2017, the district court entered an order finding that legal and physical custody should be awarded to Amy based mainly on the party's inability to co-parent, and a parenting plan was accepted by the court that reflected such finding and provided that Corey receive 8 days of parenting time per month, and the requisite child support to be paid by Corey was determined by his 2016 income. On December 7, 2017, the district court entered an amended order just for the purpose of attaching the approved parenting plan. As the scope of review in this case, the parties filed motions for a new trial, which Corey based on the parenting plan and Amy based on the child support. Both of those were denied. Corey appeals from that order, and the appellees have cross-appealed. Scope of review of this case is de novo. Child custody determinations are initially entrusted to the discretion of the trial court, reviewed de novo on the record, and will normally be affirmed absent an abuse of discretion. Abuse of discretion occurs when the trial court bases its decision upon reasons that are untenable or unreasonable, or if its action is clearly against justice, reason, and evidence.
Can you tell us why the court abused its discretion in this case?
I can, Your Honor. The court abused its discretion when it awarded sole legal and sole physical custody to Amy. The record in the case recited in the district court demonstrate that both parties were fit to have custody, as in many custody cases, though there's disputed testimony of unreasonable conduct by both parties. Fortunately, the evidence in this case didn't include instances of abuse toward one another or to Copper.
Isn't there case law that talks about joint custody being reserved for those cases where the parties are able to communicate and work productively together to raise the child?
There is case law involving that, Your Honor, and I think the facts here showed that both parents were fit. They both had the best interests of the child in mind. There are instances where the case law points toward the actions of the parties in front of the child. But I think the court abused its discretion here when it interpreted the case of Thompson versus Thompson, which was decided by this court in 2016, which is a very analogous case.
Except that in that case, there was a very fixed schedule that the firefighter father had in Thompson. In this case, in looking at the record, I can't see where the father ever really established what his fixed schedule was. I mean, he had to go to Lincoln in Omaha for surgeries 2 to 3 times a week, but there was no indication of what days of the week that would be. He indicated that he worked for maybe 15 to 30 minutes at home otherwise, but no indication of, you know, what days or when that would be required. There was just a lot of speculation, I guess, as to how a parenting plan could be determined without more specifics in terms of his work schedule.
And that's correct, Your Honor. There was, as you say, a more fixed schedule in the Thompson case. However, what the court looked at that I think is important here is that it determined that even though there was an atypical schedule in the Thompson case, the father did have additional parenting time available based on that schedule because he had several days off in a row after his 24-hour shifts. And the same here, I think, is what I urge the court to look at is the available amount of parenting time that my client has here because of the fact that he only works a couple days a week traveling to Omaha or Lincoln, has very little time when he's at home that he needs to work answering emails or some phone calls. Understanding that it's not a fixed schedule as much as it was in Thompson, but I think if you look at the amount of the time available, I think the district court could fashion some type of order that would allow him more parenting time.
But wouldn't that require additional communication between the parties, and that just did not work during the temporary time, did it?
It likely would have involved more communication, Your Honor. But same as in Thompson, this court did note that the parties had trouble communicating. In fact, to a point, they didn't communicate at all anymore. Yet the court looked past that and the fact that there was some abuse in the record, there was some alcohol issues with the father, and even put a gun to his head and committed suicide. Those actions, they still said, based on the fact that he has a schedule that allows him more time, that shouldn't deprive them of disrupting the parent-child relationship.
Well, but in that case, I think the problem was that the court ordered alternating weekends without regard, the trial court ordered alternating weekends without regard for the firefighter's schedule, which might have required him working on some of those weekends, whereas he had a very determined schedule of having 6 days off at a time, I believe, consecutive days that could have been allocated for parenting time. Your case is a little bit different. Your client received alternating weekends and I think one weeknight parenting time. So it's really not exactly like Thompson. And given, and I hear what you're saying, that there's communication issues and that shouldn't prevent a joint custody award. But again, you know, it's an abuse of discretion. Even if this court might view it a little differently and maybe think more time could have been awarded, with an abuse of discretion, it's a little difficult for us to change that.
And yes, I understand. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, but just to answer your question, I see it as a little bit different, but I think it's more analogous than it is different. Because there is additional time available, and I think the disruption is what the district court stated, that the disruption, the lack of communication outweighed any potential for disruption, and I think that's the abuse of discretion right there that is different than the Thompson case.
Thank
if there's any other questions, I'll reserve my remaining time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Chief Judge, Judge, Counsel, may it please the Court. My name is Elizabeth Crisp. I'm an associate attorney at Jacobson Orr out in Kearney, and I represent Ms. Amy Blauvelt, the mother, the appellee, and cross-appellant in this matter. The relief we're seeking today is on, as the appellee, we're requesting that this Court affirm the District Court's order regarding custody and parenting time. As cross-appellant, we're asking that this Court reverse the District Court's order regarding the calculation of Mr. Shanahan's, the father's, child support obligation.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the facts in this record in regard to this is a father who the evidence clearly shows that he spent a lot of time from the get-go helping take care of this child because he had that flexibility. Wouldn't you agree?
I would not downplay his involvement. There were some conflicts in the record as far as exactly when that was given to the child as far as maternity leave, but it does appear from the record in his statements that he was involved. It was corroborated by other witnesses, however, that Ms. Blauvelt did provide more than 50%, a more substantial amount of care.
That may be true, but it is also true, correct, that the evidence showed that he was a good father to this little girl, other than the instances where that was talked about with regard to the child falling off the bed.
Yeah, there were those three safety incidents that where the child was in the father's care and custody. But other than that, yes, I would characterize him as a good father. Certainly not the excellent father that the that was found in Thompson case. And for all the reasons that I distinguished in my brief, it's very clear that I believe that the judges see that the Thompson case is not as analogous as the appellant would.
So here's a sentence out of the district court's order that does trouble me. The court wrote, "The court finds that the likelihood of conflict outweighs any disruption of the relationship between the father and the child." So by parents having conflict, and it's not saying which parent created that more than the other, but if there's conflict, is that appropriate for the court to say that conflict outweighs the relationship between the father and the child?
I'll answer that in two ways. First, I think if you read the order as a whole, and if you have to attribute fault to either parent, I think it's clearly Mr. Shanahan. The court had the ability to observe and hear the live witnesses testify, the father and the mother.
Well, your client was calling him at 5:18 when he wasn't there by 5:15 for a pickup. Your client was calling him by 5:08 or texting him, whatever, by 5:18 wondering why he wasn't there. You don't see that as creating conflict?
It certainly errors by both parents. Co-parenting, especially at the beginning, is difficult. I'm not going to disregard any of that, Your Honor. But what the district court did here, by finding that communication difficulties when it comes to co-parenting, that's a specific factor when it comes to weighing the best interests of the child. And the factor that stands out to me is the attitude and stability of each parent's character. Now, if you have to attribute fault to the communication between two parents trying to co-parent, and what I believe the district court was trying to do was set a schedule where the parents don't see each other every day to eliminate some of that conflict, and by doing so, keeps the child out of it. I think we all can agree that having parents argue in front of the child is not good for the child's health, safety, welfare, education, growing up socially, and et cetera, and that the court had to fashion a schedule that would work for both of their work schedules, both of their attitudes, and attributed more fault to
Mr.
Shanahan.
Let's talk about attitudes a little bit. This father went to go see his daughter at the daycare, which was home daycare, was the sister-in-law of the mother, and the mother complained, didn't like that. Once she learned about it, she didn't like it, wanted a stop put to that in terms of how long he would stay, because the child had structure or routine at the daycare. So her attitude is that daycare structure trumps time with a father?
I'll agree that the district court did find that the mother overemphasized structure and routine. But later in the temporary orders, and those are in the record, the temporary order in this case was amended twice. And there was some discrepancy as to when Mr. Shanahan was working, whether or not that was 15 or 30 minutes of administrative work only, which the district court stated that it did not completely find to be truthful, and other days when he was working or maybe was not working. The point of the concern between co-parents and, is knowing where your child is going to be and knowing that holistic safety. Now, if it's at daycare, that's fine, but having the multiple stops per week, multiple times per day, and up to four times each visit certainly becomes disruptive.
But a schedule could have been established and built around his flexibility, couldn't it have?
It could have, and had the parties been able to communicate, maybe that would have been the case. But unfortunately, the district court was the result here, and then the district court, I don't believe, abused its discretion in fashioning this parenting plan to eliminate those communication issues, but also allowing both parents to spend time with their child.
What about the right of first refusal? It's my understanding your client, from the record, your client travels at least once a month.
That's correct.
And the order was she had to be gone 48 hours before he would have the right to care for the child while she's gone. I'm not sure how that fits with the rationale that was given with regard to custody. I mean, what would be wrong with him having an ability to provide overnight care when when she's out of town?
Yeah, she testified, Ms. Blaulot did testify, that she travels 12 times a year. I think it's accepting 3 months, so maybe not every month, but 12 times a year. And those are scheduled out in advance. It's because these are markets to Los Angeles, New York. They're set well, their vendors are set well in advance. So that kind of communication issue, I don't believe, you know, it's just a here's a snapshot of my schedule, this is where I'm going to be. And she testified that almost always it's more than 48 hours. So in addition to the monthly parenting time that Mr. Shanahan gets, he also gets an additional, I would call it a weekend or an extended weekend, of parenting time with a daughter.
But as I understand it, the mom testified that sometimes they were shorter than 48 hours.
Sometimes.
And so why not allow the father to have, and I think that's what Judge Arterburn's question is, why set it at 48 hours? Why that long?
I believe that the last order just said if she's traveling overnight. I don't remember there being a qualification of 48 hours. That final order was on December 7th, 2017 in the transcript, so I could, and I certainly address that in my briefing if the court is concerned about that.
So what's the negative here, given the history of this father's participation in the child's life? What would have been the negative of just alternating weeks that would have totally minimized the need for them to communicate if they had a fixed daycare that was to be used when either of them had to work? What would have been wrong with that?
Well, I think we certainly have to give the trial court the deference that it deserves as far as evaluating the witnesses and the live testimony of the parents. What the trial court did after seeing and evaluating all the text messages, which certainly came from Mr. Shanahan, more so than against Mrs. Blaufeld, seeing them testify, calling into some truthfulness questions regarding his work schedule, that the trial court found that his stability, maturity, attentiveness to the child with those safety concerns was not as beneficial as Ms. Blaufeld.
But the trial court acknowledged that the father did successfully challenge the credibility of your client with regard to some things asserted at the time of the temporary order.
At the time of the temporary order, that's correct. But as far as the final order, with the temporary order itself is based on affidavits only. With the final hearing the live witnesses, certainly called into question Mr. Shanahan's conduct. And the district court, like you said,
conduct at court, is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, I believe so. I believe reading this black and white bill of exceptions is completely different than what the district court heard at trial. And that's exactly why we have
because
that affirmative
of the
discretion. Your Honor, I'm appellate counsel only. I wasn't there, but I can tell you in my involvement on the appellate counsel within the having access to trial counsel in my firm that might exactly be the case. And that this district court judge certainly could factor that in to its truth and believability of what Mr. Shanahan was stating in all regards, and that this court should properly give the trial court its discretion in doing so. Now, I want to briefly address my cross-appeal that the district court abused its discretion when it completely disregarded over $100,000 of Mr. Shanahan's earnings in 2017 when it calculated child support. It had evidence before it, 2017, earnings from mid-January to approximately October 8th. That's almost 9 or 10 months of earnings. The court could have annualized those earnings as the guidelines in Rules 4204 require and could have not speculated by annualizing those amounts and attributed child support earnings for Mr. Shanahan as $270,000.
Given the fluctuation in his income in the 3 years that we would have in our record,
yeah.
Wouldn't the better process would to be to just average those 3 years, annualize 2017, and average the 3 years?
I see my time's about to expire. May I answer your
Please.
Question? I will direct the court to my reply brief on cross-appeal, page 3 and 4. I have a table there which shows that there's not a substantial fluctuation. It's a straight one-way trajectory of income. We go from $43,000 in 2015 to $164,000 in 2016, and then when you analyze the income, it's $270,000 in 2017.
Is there any case law that would suggest that if it's just going in one direction that you don't average?
That's correct, Your Honor, and actually it's Peter. There's a list of string side of cases. Peter, Patton, Richards, and Nanovich. I believe Judge Moore wrote Patton, so that would be a very analogous case here, that says a one-way trajectory in income does not require any kind of averaging. And what's
even when that income is based on commissions and bonuses, not salary?
That's correct. There's no evidence here that the commission and bonuses aren't reasonably expected to be earned. And I will direct the court to the BOE on page 257 and 258, where Mr. Shanahan himself admitted that his earnings and commissions were the same. In 2016 and 2017, the only difference is that he didn't receive a bonus in 2016, he received a bonus in 2016, I'm sorry, that he didn't in 17. So that certainly operates in our favor, and we ask that the court remand for recalculation of child support. Thank you.
Thank you. How much should we take, counsel, over? We'll add a minute to your time. How much does that give him?
Counsel, would you please address first the child support issues so we don't run out of time
sure.
on that?
Yeah, as was stated, the Peter case talks about one-way trajectory, and mm-hmm. that was what the evidence showed here, and that if it's a one-way trajectory, the current earnings are to be used, which is what the court did.
And wasn't the current earnings the 2017, not the 2016?
Well, the court didn't want to speculate on the 2017 earnings because it was only about 9 months at the time of trial.
Well, but the 9 months of income is not speculative, is it? That's been earned.
That
was significantly higher already than the 2016, and we know he's going to at least get salary for the rest of 2017, right?
That is true, Your Honor.
So that portion wouldn't be speculative, would it?
The nine-month portion wouldn't be, but I think the court looking at the scheme overall for child support thought it was in the best interest of the child to take the current income of 216, which was already earned throughout the whole year, because there's case law that states that if the income were to drop significantly, and the child would have a different standard of living based on that, and I think that's one of the reasons why the district court refused to speculate on that.
But you don't have anything to counter the Peter case to suggest that you average regardless when there has been a variation?
When there's a variation, I mean, I think you have to define what the variation is, and that would be if it's a up or down, increasing, decreasing, that would be considered a fluctuation, and the district court didn't find that here, and I don't think that would be appropriate here to average case. And if I could go just... I've got about a minute, 45 left. I'd just like to go back to the custody argument. As I think Judge Bishop stated, I think a schedule could have been established that would take into consideration the additional time that Corey has based on the fact that he only works full-time a couple days a week and has very little time at home working other than emails and telephone calls. Even though there is a communication issue, I think... The district court put too much weight on that fact when it said that overweighs the disruption of the parenting between the father and the daughter. Really, in the end here, you're asking, my client is just asking that based on the amount of time that he spends at home that he's not actually working, he should have more time with his daughter. He wants more time with his daughter. The evidence showed that he has a very good relationship with his daughter. He's a little loving father, as the court pointed out. Both parties are, as the court pointed out. And he's just asking that he receive more time with his daughter based on his schedule and free time at home.
Would that not require us to reassess the credibility determination? It's the court's order with regard to the amount of time your client had at home. He found that 2 days a week or the 15 minutes on the days he's not going to surgeries, not to be credible. Doesn't that put us in the position of having to assess credibility?
Well, and I think the lack of credibility on that issue that the district court found was because of some disputed testimony regarding a couple of falls that the child had. I see I'm out of time. If I may,
you can finish.
A couple of falls that the child had that the district court said the inference there is that he, you know, wasn't able to spend, you know, sufficient amount of time or paying attention to the child. But I don't think that's a logical inference. I think that's untenable based on the evidence presented. I mean, there's, you know, children fall for a number of reasons in the presence of their parents, and I think he went too far in making that determination. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matter submitted. Thank you.